You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 402, and it's Temple Week. Randall's joining me as well. Randall?
I can't believe it's actually 3 days away.
I know. Oh, man, so much going on, and we got a lot to discuss for tonight's podcast. Brian Kelly had their press conference on Tuesday. We'll cover that to start with, and then we'll get more into Temple after that. So there was also player interviews as well from some of the Irish players, and we'll mention a few of the things they discussed as well on that. But I guess let's just start. Trying to find my place here in my notes. Something that was repeated from Brian Kelly and from the players in their interviews I found interesting was the whole thing about being focused on themselves versus the opponents, Temple, but more about making sure that Notre Dame is going to be as good as they can do and focusing on that more than Temple, partly because it is the first game of the year, so they don't know everything that Temple's going to throw at them, especially with a new coach at Temple. But what did you think about that? Are you excited about that? Do you think that's a good move?
I think it is, because they don't know how to prepare for Temple. Like Brian Kelly said, there's so many different things they could do. You'd have to watch film of Florida and different schools where all these coaches come from. And if they prepare for it like a football game, like they do their part, they can win this game. It's the first game of the season. I think most schools do that. And obviously in college.
Overall, I thought Brian Kelly seemed way more upbeat and excited than other years. Did you, and maybe I just am forgetting how it was last year.
Well, no, I do think it was more than normal. I mean, he always seems upbeat. Like, he's more on the positive side. He's not a Lou Holtz that was negative and basically told you his team wasn't any good. But he's definitely, yesterday was the most excited I've seen him. He even said he wishes Temple would get here a little bit early. He'd be totally fine with them showing up earlier. And that's not something you've heard from him before. I mean, usually a coach wants to get in all the practices. You know, they have a couple left. But he says this is the most mentally prepared team he's had. And he's ready to go. He's ready to just get out there and actually play a football game.
This is kind of tying in, or this is from Mike McGlinchey's interview. He was asked, we've heard that, oh, this year the players are more engaged. But then he was asked about this, as far as the confidence going into this game, is it different than it was other years? And he did say that every year you go into it being really confident. So why should we as fans be confident that this year is going to be different than last year? And I think there's a lot of reasons for that with some of the changes that were made. But I'm assuming that last year going into it, that Mike McGlinchey was equally confident. And it was more towards the offensive line being able to run the ball. It was more towards that part of it. But I think every one of these players would say that, oh, yeah, they're very confident in what this team's going to be. But I'm pretty sure they would have given the same answer at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And even some of the questions that were aimed at Brian Kelly about last year's team, he was like, he doesn't remember anything about last year. So I do think it's time. I personally am ready to move on. I am tired of talking about last year. What's going to be different than last year? Blah, blah, blah. Last year. Let's move on. It's the first game of the year, and I think we can finally move forward.
And just to hit on, I do think there is reason to believe that this year is different, aside from confidence level. There's a number of things that all the fans are familiar with. We'll just skip that. Let's go through what Brian Kelly talked about as far as the offensive staff. Chip Long will, at least for Temple, will be on the sideline. And Brian Kelly said that's because he wants to get a feel for the game. And maybe at some point he will be up in the booth, but for right now he will be on the sideline.
And the only other coach to join him up there is Tommy Reese. So it is, Brian Kelly said, there are less people up in the booth than what had been on previous years. But at this point, Elko and Reese are the guys in the booth, and everyone else is down in the field. I would have almost, personally, I think I'd rather have the defensive coach down there. Maybe it's just because of how the defense has played at Notre Dame the last couple of years. But I'd almost rather have the defensive coach. In my mind, the defense has to adjust to what the offense is doing. The offense can usually control the game more than what the defense can.
I don't know if I agree with you or not, because on the flip side, I think that the defense has to have an answer then for the offense. And you can you definitely need someone up there just so you get a better picture of what is happening.
Yeah.
Because it is hard to see. You can't see if you're on the sideline.
Yeah, well, some of the things that Brian Kelly said went into the decision was, you know, they talked about how they want to get the plays out onto the field, especially on defense, who would be the signaling the plays, different. The communication was a lot of it, and this obviously worked out for the best, and maybe it's because Elko can get a better view of the defense from the booth. I mean, I think there's advantages to having guys up there as well to get a different view of the game.
One comment that Mike McGlinchey made that I thought was funny about the new video board is that when the offensive line is coming off the field, he said that Coach Heastan will be able to see what's happening, won't need to rely as much on what the O-line are saying is happening out there.
I figure that's too advanced for Harry Heastan. He'd rather be standing there yelling at the players.
On the quarterback, Brian Kelly said that Brandon Wimbush, one thing that he doesn't let mistakes get to him, he moves on. That's something that he really likes. And Michael Lynch mentioned this aura around Brandon Wimbush and said he's the coolest kid that he knows.
Yeah, and I thought one interesting thing from Brandon Wimbush, he was asked when the last game was that he started, and instantly he remembered the exact date, year, I mean everything, which he did say it was at the biggest stage, you know, in his high school career. It was in the Giants Stadium. It was the state championship, and it was raining. So I'm sure a lot of guys remember that, but he knew right away the exact date. I would probably tend to forget the actual day of the month it would have been, but he's obviously ready to go. And, you know, he talked about, you know, he was at the top, basically at the top, as a high school quarterback, and then you come to college and you're
at the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah, and there's a slow process to get back to the top. And so it has been taking a little bit longer than a lot of quarterbacks in Notre Dame's recent history.
Something we learned about Brandon Wimbush is that in his free time, he likes to draw. And when he was pressed on this in his interview, he said the last thing he drew was a police officer and a lady that was stealing something out of a safe with flowers in the background.
Yeah.
But he said usually it's just very random stuff, whatever it comes to his mind.
That's pretty random.
His mind. It is random. All right, let's move on then. Running back situation. Brian Kelly was asked if this will be a hot hand situation or a rotation. And he said that all three of these guys, he believes, have a future beyond college football. And that they will probably play a little bit of a hot hand. So Josh Adams is going to start. And so if he has a hot hand, he'll definitely get a majority of the carries. But he also said that they do want the guys to stay fresh. So if one of them is getting a little gassed, if Josh Adams is getting gassed, he'll probably swap out sooner than later to keep him, to bring him back in later so he's fresh at the end of the game.
And he also mentioned that they're all three of them are actively involved in the game plan. So they are part of the game plan going in. All three of them are.
For Temple.
I mean, yeah.
All right, and then wide receiver. Was there anything else, Randall, on the running backs?
No.
Something interesting with the depth chart was that Freddie Kantin was at the top of one of the wide receiver positions. That was surprising. I know that Brian Kelly has talked about these grad transfers and EQ and Cam Smith are the two that I think everyone assumed would be at the top of the depth chart.
Cam Smith was a surprise to a lot of people. If you haven't been closely following fall camp, Cam Smith was surprised.
I mean, Freddie Canteen.
And Cam Smith.
No. Randall, he's been talking
If you haven't been following up with fall camp,
yeah,
it is a surprise. You see this depth chart, and it is a surprise. I've talked to different people, and they're like, one of the transfers actually is starting, or both of them. And so I think people are kind of surprised by both. I'm not surprised that he's starting.
But aren't you surprised by Freddie Canteen?
Yes, I am surprised by that.
I didn't know who the third guy would be because I think we've seen a little bit of maybe Chase Claypool, maybe Chris Fink. We've seen a couple of names floated around. And so I was surprised by that one. But
here's,
again, go ahead.
Well, here's how I look at the depth chart. This is a depth chart that they have to put, that they put out. Brian Kelly was asked to make one or whatever, and they put it out.
And
there's 12 receivers. They're all going to be part of it. It's not – they're the first guys on the field.
And it does say –
they're called the starter. It's
Freddie Canteen or Chris Fink.
Which when Wimbush was asked, I mean, he acted like they were the starters. But this is – they're the first guys on the field, basically.
That's pretty much – we were. I think
somebody
we
else could get more playing time than them.
I think we were talking about it. It was either on Twitter or on the forums. And that's kind of how exactly what you said. That's how I expected it to go too. EQ, I think, will be out there a lot. And I do think Cam Smith will be out there a lot. But the other position and the next four guys down from there, I think are going to play this week.
Well, I think the biggest shock is, and people are wondering why Claypool isn't one of those three guys. And like we mentioned before, you know, I think it's because of maybe his practice. He's making highlight catches, but then there's also times when he isn't. And so maybe the effort isn't there 100% of the time. But he's going to be out there quite a bit.
All right, tight ends, just more confirmation. Mack is good to go. Brian Wimbush said that Alize Mack is a dynamic weapon. Great playmaker, and said it'll be easy to get him the ball. And the depth chart there, again, Jerm Smythe is listed above Alize, but I do agree with you, Randall. They needed to put a depth chart out there, and I think probably four, there's probably going to be four tight ends that are going to play against Temple.
Yeah.
Maybe not all five of them.
This is almost like the Temple depth chart. I did do an interview with the guy from Temple, and he talked about Temple's depth chart. It's above the line, as they call it. And their coach doesn't like to name starters because he says if you are the third string guy, at some point you're going to start practicing like the third string guy. Maybe that's Kevin Stefferson's problem. Maybe if they wouldn't have told him. Anyways, so there's a little bit of that going on here.
And then offensive line, Niles Morgan, in his interview when he was asked about the offensive line, singled out Mustafa as one guy that has really stepped up and made improvements during the offseason.
And I like Niles Morgan's interview. He doesn't – you're not going to get a question past him without – I mean, he questions you. If he doesn't understand it at all, he will say, like, what do you mean, or – He doesn't get that or whatever. He will say something. It's not like he'll just come up with some random answer for you. He's obviously thinking about it and wants to know what you mean, and he's not going to give you some crazy answer.
And then on defense, Brian Kelly was asked what are three things that I think it was the question was, what are three things that they've improved on? Go ahead.
Oh, well, with the linebackers, the depth chart, that was the other depth chart.
We'll get to you. We haven't covered the defense yet. Number one, be great against the run. Stop the run. Number two, don't give up any big pass plays. And number three, take away the ball. So pretty much what you need to do to play defense, at least if you want to play good defense.
Yeah.
But I think that order is important too. That the first thing they're going to – I think there is a much greater emphasis on stopping the run. And we'll see how well – I mean, there'll be a few tests coming up here in the next few weeks. Let's start at safety. Gilman was denied his His waiver to play this year. Brian Kelly said they may appeal it, but the decision would be the athletic director and someone else.
And I guess the reason you wonder why they would appeal it, as Brian Kelly explained it, so they obviously applied the first time, and that's a pretty cut and dry answer. He said this second appeal, he's actually been part of the board that reviews those, and it's made up of athletic directors and some other guys that review that, and then they take into consideration all kinds of different things.
It's not worth it. If it took this long just to get the initial appeal, to get information on that, how long is it going to take to do this appeal?
Well, I agree, except the only difference is it's not the NCAA. It's athletic directors and coaches, people tied with the school. It's not the NCAA. But I agree. I'm agreeing with you. To finish what I was saying with Brian Kelly, he said there's some things that they'd want to show them about this situation that they wouldn't have before. So there's some things that Notre Dame would want to show them that they think would give them reason. You know, if they'd see that, they would say, oh, he can play. But I agree. Let's say even if it takes 2 weeks, you miss two games, Your 1 year of eligibility, you know, isn't a full season, basically. But two games wouldn't be too bad, but
But he has more than 1 year left.
He has 3 years left.
Yeah, so it's not like he's a fifth-year grad transfer.
No. But it would give him time. I think at this point, just drop it. It'll give him time to... here's the only thing.
If there would be any chance he comes back for the last half of this season, it's worth it. But I don't believe there's even a chance that would happen.
Yes, there is.
No, Randall.
There's been less time that he's been there till now than there is till now until half of the season.
Well, if there's a chance they would get him back for half the season, then I definitely think they'll pursue it.
Here's one reason that they might appeal it, is if they're at all worried about the depth.
Well,
because they have other guys that are playing now, and I don't know how long they can wait to appeal it, but you know, if somebody would get hurt.
At this point, they know where they're at with depth. I know, but I'm saying that's the
one thing that I think will decide whether they will appeal or not.
All right. What else was there?
But you didn't think they'd have an answer before Saturday. They had the answer.
You're right. But now we'll never get to see. It's too bad.
If he would have played.
I know. It's too bad we did. It wasn't a positive outcome.
I know. So you're saying now if they appeal, let's say they appeal, that he won't play the first half of the season? They won't know the first six games
no,
of the season?
No. If they appeal, it will be at the earliest.
No. If they appeal, they will know before that.
Maybe we should put this question in our over and under predictions.
I also don't think they're going to appeal, but who knows?
Cornerback Julian Love is another player that Brian Kelly was raving about as far as all the new data they can see, talking about how he's one guy that typically after fall camp practices, usually they have less explosiveness, they're just a little bit slower. And in one of the metrics they're looking at, I don't remember what it was, but I'm thinking it was something to do with lifting, or as far as the leg power or quickness, he had increased 22%. And typically you see a decrease.
Yeah.
So physically, this kid is unbelievable. And even last year as a true freshman, he was making plays and got on the field. So very excited to see what Julian Love is able to do this season. I don't have anything more with the cornerbacks, do you?
No, I was just going to say that, I mean, they keep raving about him in the workouts. I mean, he's just, you know, he keeps getting stronger and better versus, you know,
slowing down. Are you worried about him getting too strong, Randall?
Because of injuries?
Yeah.
No, he's completely healthy. That he's doing a full body workout. He's not doing just upper body or lower body and then trying to catch up.
And then the linebackers, Morgan was asked what his role is when things don't go wrong. You know, in a football game, there's ups and downs, and there's always, at some point, the defense does screw up, make a mistake. And he said his role is to keep guys level-headed, whether whether they're ahead or whether they're losing, keep guys level-headed and just moving on to the next play. And then you'd mentioned you had something about the linebackers.
Oh, well, as far as the depth chart, Niles Morgan's backup is Jameer Jones. So that was kind of interesting because I think we all expect that if we shouldn't even talk about it, but if Niles Morgan, well, if they come in at the end of the game, Niles Morgan's backup.
No, we can talk about players getting injured. I'm not buying into that crap.
Next game would be Greer Martini.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think so too, except wasn't Tavon also cross-training at Mike?
Well, he was his backup 2 years ago. He did play middle line. Tavon did. But Greer and Tavon, it's listed, they're at the buck, they're listed or.
And Brian Kelly mentioned that, you know, this isn't going to be a defense that plays 11 players. They're going to play a decent amount of players. And he did mention Tavon and Greer, both those guys will play against Temple.
Yeah, that's how he explained the or in there. He said there's like 15 or 16 guys that are going to play. Like, it's not just a matter of them being the backup, they're going to play.
But I do think you're right. We'll probably see, if Niles would go down, probably see Greer move over to that Mike position.
And he was asked about the amount of plays. Brian Kelly said 11 guys playing 85 snaps is not the defense that Notre Dame is. They're not going to.
And then defensive line, how many snaps can we expect from these freshman defensive linemen where we've got Kurt Heinisch and Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa? Not 40 or 50. Brian Kelly said that's a direct quote, not 40 or 50 snaps. They will come in for some special roles. They will play, but not a ton. And he said that physically, mentally, they're able to go, and they will have small roles.
Yeah, and when Mike McGlinchey was asked about this D-line, he kind of called out the media guys there. He basically said, these guys have been getting a lot of crap from people, including guys in this room. And so I was kind of surprised he said that in front of all the media guys, but he said they are going to surprise people. And we've kind of been saying that. Ruben, you've been mentioning that they're going to be better than what we had thought. I think it helps. Everybody's very down on them. Everybody was. And so that just makes them look that much better. And I do think that they are a very improved unit. It's just once you get in those two deeps, it's just they don't have much experience at all. But there you have another guy that's the or guy at two spots. You have Andrew Trombetti. He's listed at both defensive end spots.
He could start at both positions at the same time.
So,
okay. Special teams are punt returner Chris Fink, kickoff returner CJ Sanders, and we know what the kicking situation is like. I think that's all I've got, Randall, about from the press conference. Are you ready to move over and talk about the preview for Temple?
Yes. Our first preview of the year.
I know. I think every year we end up doing it just a little bit different as far as the podcast, how we preview the team. But I think this is maybe the best way to do it. It depends also what Brian Kelly says in the press conference. Often we'll probably use some of that when we're talking more about Temple. But yeah, Randall, you did the interview with
Kyle Gauss.
Kyle Gauss from owlscoop.com. It's a rival site. And I probably the biggest question I think just normal fans have is if they've heard about the quarterback situation at Temple. And that's probably what most fans are excited about and wondering about.
Yeah, exactly. And we will plan to, there'll be a separate podcast. That interview, we will release that then so you can hear directly from Kyle. But like I mentioned, talking about their depth chart, he said their coach does not believe in, you know, first string, second string. They're either above the line or they're below the line. And so his theory is, you know, that if you're a third string guy, you're going to practice like that, or, you know, you won't be ready to go if you're called upon. That might be true, but I think he's hiding a lot of things too, because there's different positions where there's obviously major questions.
Well, okay, even at quarterback, you're not going to be getting optimal quarterback play if you're splitting the time evenly as far as the reps that different guys are getting.
Well, we all know about...
And we know how that
quarterback situation is going into the season.
So there's no way the team doesn't know which player is getting more snaps.
Well, based on what Kyle said, there's going to be one guy that's going to take, in his mind, there's going to be one guy that takes 80% of the snaps. And then they have another guy that takes about 20, and they might have some red zone stuff for the third guy. So it sounds like it's going to be some complicated thing, but it from what Kyle's saying, they're going to basically play one quarterback most of the game.
And which quarterback was that?
He mentioned Frank Neutile would probably be the main guy out there. He'll be the first guy out there and probably end up playing the majority of the game. And then Logan Marchi would be the second guy that could get some reps. He's more mobile. He could get some reps. And then possibly Todd Senteo, freshman, would be the third guy.
And then he would be maybe the redshirt option where they have some Is that kind of what was assumed?
You mean with Todd Senteo?
Yeah, there was...
He'd be a true freshman.
But wasn't there one quarterback that was rumored to have maybe some red zone packages where maybe he's has some special
Logan
talents?
Marchi would be the second guy coming in.
Okay.
And because of some of that.
Okay.
So, from what Kyle said, he expects to see Frank Neutile out there most of the time.
Okay.
And all this talk about all the different quarterbacks is just, they're just putting that out there. He wants all the quarterbacks to put another one of his above, they're all above the line, I guess you could say. So, we all know what happens when you try to play two quarterbacks. Don't know who the starter is going into the first game of the season. We saw that last year going into Temple, and I think it cost Notre Dame the game. I really do. And,
it's
different for Temple, because everybody expects Notre Dame to win. But if they want to win, I think they have to narrow it down to one guy. It majorly hurts their chances going in with two.
And that may just be hidden from the media, too, or maybe they don't. Maybe he's just the coach is just trying to be more secretive to try to, as an advantage against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Either way, one similarity, Stevenson wasn't listed on Notre Dame's depth chart. I'm pretty sure he'd be under the line on Temple's depth chart as well.
Yeah. I wonder how bad it is if you're still under the line there at Temple.
How many guys are under the line?
There's quite a few.
Okay. We do know that their receiving core is pretty powerful. Probably the best unit on the entire team. What do you know, Randall, about the receiving core coming in to Notre Dame?
Well, they have a lot of talent, but the problem is you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have a guy to get them the ball, it doesn't really matter. That's where wide receivers get hurt, is because you might be this first-team All-American, but if the quarterback can't get you the ball, you won't get there. And that just complicates the matter even more. I mean, with this, they got to figure out the quarterback situation in order to get these wide receivers the ball. So it would make sense if they stick with, you know, Frank Neutile, try to stay with him. Even if he struggles a little bit, these wide receivers are going to help him out a lot. And then the running backs as well. I mean, they have a very talented running back group, and that's what Notre Dame... It'll be a good test for them. First game of the year going against these guys. Raquel Armstead is the main guy. 5'11", 205. And here's a chance for Notre Dame to shut down the running back, because that's what they need to do against this team and make the quarterback get the ball out to the receivers.
And these receivers are big receivers. All of them are, at least the three main ones, are 6'3". So these are big receivers. It'll be a really tough test for our cornerbacks. Yeah, it'll be tough going for them, assuming that the quarterback can deliver on his end.
It sounds like it, but remember who these cornerbacks are going up against in Notre Dame practice.
guys who can't separate themselves.
Guys that are taller than this.
I know,
guys that are taller than this.
There's still guys who can't separate themselves. Besides EQ, they pretty much can't separate. You know, the guys aren't stepping up. Is the other way to look at that.
Yeah. But even if, I mean, like, they're big receivers, but I don't think that matters to Notre Dame defenders.
It is true. Notre Dame's cornerbacks are used to going against, yeah, guys that are 6'3 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. What can we expect from the offensive line for Temple?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. They do have older guys on there. They have a couple seniors. So they do have experience. The offensive line does have experience. And that will definitely help the quarterback situation. So it seems like the quarterback is protected in this offense. You've got a good wide receiver core. You got a good running back. And you got a decent offensive line.
I would say it's probably decent, not great.
Yeah, I can't tell. I haven't watched their offensive line at all. But
so somewhere, I don't remember if it was another podcast I listened to, but their center is a redshirt freshman that only played three games. Does
yes,
that ring a bell?
Yes, you're right. Yes.
And the Temple writers said that he might be the best offensive lineman of the unit. So that makes me wonder, well, if a redshirt freshman is the best offensive line on the unit, that makes me think, well, maybe these other guys, they might be solid and have a couple of years of experience, but they might not be great.
Yeah. But I think they're not the most talented, but I don't think you'll see as many mistakes out of them having experience, having been there a couple of years. And it's easy to forget that Temple has won 10 games the last two seasons. I mean, they have been a good program. And they were getting better. It's just now they have a new coaching staff. They have had a lot of changes. You know, they lost their number one quarterback, who's actually now playing for the Colts. We might see him if Andrew Luck doesn't make it back. So they did have they had NFL talent. There's still some NFL talent on this team.
And then what about on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, to start off with, the linebackers are all very inexperienced. That's probably their most inexperienced group. And they're making some bold predictions.
The linebackers are.
Yes. One of the linebackers said that it's going to be a blowout. They're going to beat Notre Dame. It's going to be a blowout. So the thing is, he has yet to start his first game in college. So I don't know if Notre Dame is even paying attention to that. Anymore, it seems like it happens a lot. Teams talking like that. Sean Bradley, the middle linebacker, is the guy that said that. And yeah, he said they aren't just going to win. It's going to be a blowout. And then one of the others, the cornerback said they're going to kick Notre Dame's ass. So, and the defense is feeling confident.
And the defensive
backs, let's say they're talking confident.
They're talking a good game. The defensive backs are good. Brian Kelly even mentioned that too in the press conference, that, you know, it's a very, very solid unit. One thing that I did find very funny, Niles Morgan in his interview said that he thinks that Notre Dame's defense going against Temple's offense is very compatible. So I think he's feeling some confidence as well.
Yeah. But definitely on the defense, the most inexperienced group is the linebackers, and the most experienced group is the defensive backs. And like I mentioned in the interview, I'm glad to hear that the linebackers are inexperienced, just because we saw too much of their other middle linebacker, the red-haired middle linebacker, Matakavich.
God, that guy was annoying.
2 years ago. So it's good to see that, yeah, it's their first, they don't have much experience.
All right, it will be an exciting day of college football. Lots of good games opening weekend. And do you have anything more, Randall, I guess, with the preview?
Are you going to give your score prediction now?
Yeah. This interview, Randall did the interview with Kyle from owlscoop.com. That will be on later this week, and you can listen to that full interview. For our score predictions.
Do you know what the spread is, Ruben?
I knew what it was
usually
earlier.
You know, I'm reversing this. You're the one asking.
It started off a few weeks ago at 14.5 points, and then I thought it went up to closer to maybe 21-ish points.
When I had seen it yesterday, it was at set, which I had forgotten about it when I made my score prediction, but right now I think it's up to 18. 18.5. But I think for Notre Dame to going into this game, their number one thing should be stopping the run and making the quarterback throw the ball. And it'll give them – that's what we all need. That's what we need to see going into Georgia. We're all talking about Georgia. I don't want to jump to the next game. Look ahead at Temple.
I agree.
But this is a good chance for them to see what they can do stopping the run. Because I think Temple knows that if they can't run the ball, they're going to have a lot of issues with this quarterback situation. And so that's the number one thing Notre Dame needs to do. And then on the opposite side, Notre Dame needs to run the ball as well. And it looks like they'll have success doing that versus going up against, you know, deeper throws with these experienced defensive backs that Temple has. So for Notre Dame to win, the best scenario is Notre Dame stop the run and be able to run the ball. So, nothing that complicated. I predicted 34-17.
Oh, we're close.
And that's actually close to the spread. It's 17 points. It jumped up to 18 now. But
I do think what Notre Dame fans want Notre Dame to do and what Notre Dame is geared to do with great offensive line, I think they'll have success running the football. I think they'll want to do that just because of what you said, the kind of the strength that Temple has on defense with the defensive backs being better, inexperience at linebacker, and then also they lost a lot of talent that they need to replace on the defensive line from last year. So I do expect a major emphasis on the run, and as long as it's working, I think we'll continue to see that throughout the year. I'm picking Notre Dame 34-21. So we're
nice.
We matched up on Notre Dame's output, not quite on Temple. And, yeah, I would be very happy with this score. Temple, they might be falling off. Who knows how the new coaching staff is going to do with this team. They might be falling off, but they still do have talent there. It's not like this is just some cakewalk talent team.
And like we talked about before, Mike Elko, his last game was against the Temple Owls. But as Kyle pointed out, it's a completely different team. New coaching staff. That team didn't even have a head coach. Matt Rhule had already left for Baylor. The team was just out of it. And the bad news is they put up some big numbers against Mike Elko's defense.
I remember
they threw for 400 yards against...
but they didn't run a whole lot.
I know, but that's not something you want to hear.
I remember, I don't know if I watched the entire game, but I caught glimpses of it. And I remember on Twitter, Notre Dame fans, and maybe it was even the media, tweeting out about, oh, Mike Elko, he's really handling this Temple team. And then as it went on, Temple did score.
They
scored
start.
Some more points.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all we've got. We will have the interview, like I said, later this week. We will also do a over and under predictions podcast, and we'll be tweeting out on Twitter a poll so you can answer, and then we'll read off the polls along with what we think as far as some over and under predictions. That's all I've got, Randall. Anything else from you?
I think that's it.
All right. Thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.